begin by you telling me your name and where you were born.
My name is Annie Sarich, but I have been called Anita most part of my life, and Anna. I was born in Phoenix, B.C.
And your name is Anita Anderson now?
Yes.
You had mentioned that when you lived in Phoenix, the Granby Mine was shut down.
Yes. Well, my father came to Phoenix, B.C. Shortly after the turn of the century, and the mining was set up there, a mining town, and four of us girls were born there, my sisters, and the Granby Company had pulled out, and the miners and their families had to pull stake and go elsewhere to start their life, which was a very fine community town, and it broke their hearts because they had to leave and move other places. And that was how my father, through his relatives, moved us to Saskatchewan to buy a homestead and start farming up until his death, 1927.
Was it very hard to live on the farm? Was it hard?
Yes, it was a hardship because there was no machinery. It was hard to family just pulled together and just worked on the farm. And the very interesting part of it was that all the farmers around came to help anyone that just moved in, and that was great. I remember that. But we had so many immigrants, people coming from the old country and coming to the prairies, and I remember at one time we had as many as 24 people staying at our farm, and then they would move on to Ontario and to British Columbia and elsewhere, but many of them my dad helped to settle them over here.
Was the community in Saskatchewan primarily made up of ethnic groups?
Yes.
Which groups were those?
Well, there were Ukrainians, Russian, Scandinavian, and Yugoslavian people.
When you came to B.C., why did you do so?
Well, in 1929, we stayed on the farm until 19 till that time, and my father had married again, and she had three children, and they decided that they could not carry on the farm work, so the articles and items on the farm machinery, and that was sold, and we moved back to British Columbia. I came to Princeton because we had relatives there, and Marion and I were going to live with them and continue our education, but that wasn't so because they were all struggling, and that was a mining town in Princeton too, that they all had big families, and so we just had to strike off to look for work at a very early age, which was domestics. There was nothing else around but this type of employment.
Okay. When did you begin to work? Do you remember what year that was? We can come back to those.
Thing is, we're not...
I know, but...
Oh.
I was asking when you began to work, about what year that was, and...
Well, 1929.
Right, okay.
I'd say.
And how were young women placed in domestic service in those days?
Well, you just, they were not placed. It's just you talked to people and you went around and you heard of somebody was wanting some help in a hotel or to a chambermaid, or whether it was cooking or whether it was looking after children. And this is what you did.
Okay. And what kind of alternatives in terms of work were there for single young women who were in the city?
For most of the young women, there was domestic chambermaid or domestics. doing domestics in for private families, those who were in business and otherwise. You just had to. It was tough.
Can you describe your first job?
Well, my first job was working for a family in Princeton, and they kept boarders, and they had a lot of children, and it was very unsatisfactory, and there was a great hardship to stay there. But I stayed as long as I could, and then I moved on to Vancouver Island, and then I worked in a hotel there and did the similar. But I moved there because I had a married sister living there and my brother-in-law. And it was a bit better. And the wages were better.
So you were working on the island?
Mm-hmm.
And was that where...
She was a friend of the family's, and she sort of wanted me to just fit my life in with them and grow, sort of continue my life with them. And she had a very large family, but they were better cared for, and they were...
Can you talk a bit about the kind of attitudes there were towards domestic workers from the people who employed them?
Well, they just gave you room and board and a little bit of spending money. That's about what it was. And you either slept with the children or you had a makeshift place to sleep. But it was a home. You had to have somewhere to live.
Was it difficult to find housing during the Depression?
Yes. You just didn't find housing. You went to work for people, domestics, and just lived in. And your early part of life, from those early years, that's how you had to maintain a home.
And what would couples do? Would they live in an apartment or a house or during the Depression?
Well, married couples were renting houses, and they usually had, everybody was having somebody else living with them. Or they had just plain housekeeping rooms where they just cooked, slept, and everything in one room. They didn't have, it was furnished, and this is how they had to live until they bettered themselves by getting better employment with more money, and then they could move to a larger apartment. But most people had housekeeping rooms and rented out a room if they had a home, and this is how they just managed. Most people lived in housekeeping rooms and just made shift.
Can you talk about some of the tasks you had at work, the kind of things that you would do at work in your first few jobs?
Well, it was just looking after children, helping with the cooking, keeping the house clean, and just general. It wasn't anything not 9 to 5. It was just all the time. You had to be. You were doing everything, and for at the most you got was $15 a month, and up to $25 a month.
So you were constantly on call.
You were always there. You just took it for granted. That was your home, and domestics did. I remember now correctly. The domestics did try to get organized into it, but most of the girls were afraid to get organized because if their employer heard it, they would be out of a job. But they did. I remember that they did try to get people organized in domestics.
Can you describe a bit of the process that went on around that organizing?
Not very much, because as I say, I think that the people were frightened, were scared to get organized. So I don't know too much about it. That was 29 to 30, and then 31, 32, 33, and up to 34. I came back to Vancouver, and I applied for a housekeeping domestic here in Vancouver, and I was placed in several jobs this way.
Can you describe those jobs, sort of each one?
Well, each one had one was where they advertised for mother's help, and they had their family all at home yet, their daughters, and it was doing everything, keeping the house clean, cutting the grass, and doing the dishes, and just looking after. But it was a beautiful home, and there were Jewish people, and the lady of my employer, she was very fine woman, and very understanding, and her husband. But they only paid $8 a month. They just wanted mother's help and someone to be in the house. But they, you know, it was really too much.
Too much work for too little money.
For little money. Mm-hmm. But the food was very good, and they were very good to me.
Then you moved on to another job?
Then I moved on to another job, which was advertised for also mother's help. She had just had twins, and they were on the same day as the Dayon quintuplets. And I was there 15 months, but it got to be more than I could take, because it was looking after the twins and doing the cooking and helping with everything. And my day off would be always a Thursday, and I never got away until late in the afternoon. It was too late to do anything. And you had other friends to visit, and you had places to go to, and things you were invited to. You just always got there so late. And the bus fare was 7 cents to ride the streetcar, and sometimes you didn't have enough money to go to visit your relatives, so you just walked from South Vancouver to way down wherever you were going, and maybe just took the streetcar back.
When you were working at these places, how were the attitudes of the employers to their domestic help? Did they look down on them? Did they treat
them
as equal?
Yes, some of them did. I would say that they made you feel that you were a maid, and or you were your shiksa, and you were their maid. They made you feel that way sometimes when their company was around. It was very unhappy about that. And then they could be just the opposite when their friends were not around.
Was this something that a lot of young domestic workers shared, that feeling of being...
Yes. So we'd get together and we'd talk about it on our day off, and the girls would just say, you know, she just couldn't be any more than a mother would be to me. And I found that too, but I found the other.
Right. How about in terms of young women who were taking care of children, did they find that they got attached to the children?
Yes, I got attached to the twins, and they got attached to me, and this caused a problem, because I could feel this coming over the lady I was working for, jealousy, and I almost had a nervous breakdown there, because I just worked so hard, and I just fell in love with those children. They just ran after me, and they were just cuddling up to me, and they were just so sweet.
Yeah. Did you do any other domestic work after that?
I went to work for a dentist. I worked in their home. I did everything. Even he had a dentist office in the home, and I helped with that as well as doing everything. But they were very down-to-earth people, and very, very, very kind, and appreciated you.
Right.
But I only received $10 a month there, and that, I think, was the last of my domestic work until I started to get more involved in the restaurant work.
Okay. And domestic labor, was this a job where it was pretty well women only?
Yes.
Okay. And the women who were domestics, were there different races, ethnic groups, or nationalities who worked as domestics? Or were there, like, for example, were many of the domestic workers immigrant women, or were they?
Yes, some of them were immigrant women. Most of them were native daughters.
Okay. And was this pretty well what most young women did, even if
yes.
they had families?
Yes. They had to get employment, and so they would just say, go and do housework. That's all there was. Because you didn't have you were too young, you didn't have the education, you weren't in that, you know, to be a teacher or to work in an office, because my education stopped so early.
And let's see. Can you then talk a bit about where you went after you worked as a domestic worker? You became a waitress, or?
Well, I wanted to look into restaurant work, and I did, and I think my first job was that I had as a bus girl. My sister and I went there as bus girls at the Trocadero Cafe, and which at that time we began to get organized, and we found out that there was something that we could do about it, because the conditions were not that good, the pay was very poor, and there was a time to do something, and we did hear that there was a union organizer for the restaurant employees, so we looked into that after we had talked to quite a few of the people who were working in this restaurant, and they were quite willing to do something about it, so we went to see them. It was Bill Stewart, who has passed on now, and Bill Gateman. Bill Stewart was the organizer. And we formed a union, and that was at the time that strike was held in 1936. So it was real struggle up to then, prior getting into restaurant work.
Right, okay. Can you talk a bit about exactly what the conditions were like at the Trocadero?
Well, the food was good. You had to pay for broken dishes, which you didn't break, and there was by the time you paid for your uniform and so much for a little bit for the food, and that you didn't have very much left.
Right. Okay. And how would you be paid? Would you be paid in cash or?
Yes. Yes.
And were people ever paid short? In the restaurant?
I couldn't say that, no.
Okay. And what did a bus girl do? What were her
Well, the bus girl had to just set the table, clear the tables, see that the coffee was made and that there's ice water and cutlery, and looked after the sweeping of the floors, and just general work, but you did not wait on the customers.
Did you serve a lot of people, though?
Yes, it was a busy restaurant, and we served a lot of people. It was a well-known restaurant.
Was there a lot of pressure at work?
In a way, yes.
Okay. And when you began to organize, how did you do that? Did Bill Stewart tell you what to do?
Yes. We went out to the Union Hall and we got organized. He told us, and so we held meetings until the day of the strike, which was in the summertime in 1936.
And did you sign people up?
Yes, we signed quite a few people up, and sounded though as everyone was together on this, but few people backed off and reported it to the employer, the manager, and that morning when we came to work, he approached me and my sister and a few other people, said, I hear there's going to be a strike here, and if you have anything to do with it, I want you to get off this property right now. Well, we just did not. Kept on doing our bus work, and Bill Stewart came and approached him and told him that if the wages had to be increased and the working conditions, and he said no, so we're going to have a strike. So we went out and picketed the place, and we had a lot of support from the public. But all of the people that stayed on. They just stayed on and worked. But we had a lot of support from the public.
Did other workers go out on strike with you from the Trocadero?
Well, the ones that joined up the union and said that they would, those, actually, they were all signed up and they were going to go support this move. But then they backed off. Several people backed off and they stayed on and worked.
Okay.
And you would call them scabs.
Right. Okay. And what kind of edge did the police have to the strike?
Well, we never had any problems. They were they said you can go out and picket, but you can't stay here. He's ordered you out of the place, or you, but you can picket. He did say that. They did say that.
So he called the police?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There were no.
And did the police have that kind of attitude in part because they were customers?
Or? Police were sympathetic to the strikers because they ate there and got to know the girls, the bus girls and the waitresses. And so in this way, the customers were just like, you know, you become like a family because they're eating there every day and you see them every day. And so there was there were no
right. Okay.
You call it demonstration or no.
How long were you out on strike?
Well, I think it took about a month.
And did you have help picketing from?
Yes, other people came and helped to picket, but we used to just wear our uniform, what we wore at work. And picketed.
And what were the main demands of the strike?
Well, more pay, better conditions, and union recognition.
Did you have support from other unionists in your own union?
Or yes.
What would they do?
Well, they just came and picketed with us, and they brought us help towards the relief fund. And people used to go by in the streetcars and just would wave and cheer us on and good for you and this sort of thing, and they would bring us cigarettes, chocolate bars, gum, and Lotus Taxi at that time would drive the girls home every night so there would be no harm come to them from the picket line. It was a very good feeling about that strike.
What was the outcome of it?
Well, they carried on. Some of the people got rehired, but the people who were instigated it and tried to organize them, they were left on the out, and so they were not able to get work for a long, long time.
Were you one of those people?
Yes.
Was that blacklisting?
Yes.
Okay. What kind of...
Well, later I did get work from another restaurant, and I was hired there as a waitress at the Ye Olde English Fish and Chips, and he says, I'll take you. So my sister and I were working there, and I used to work part-time in the union office, giving people receipts for their dues and helping with the bookwork. I was doing that part-time and working at the fish and chip restaurant.
When you were trying to organize...
Which was a union house.
It was. What were the differences then between...
Oh, it was a lot of different. There was a lot of difference. It was, you know, you could talk about your union and you, and there was better pay, better working conditions.
When you were organizing for the Trocadero, how would you go about talking people into joining?
Well, it was very hard because you would talk to them, and it was everybody approached somebody else. You didn't do it all, and they were nervous, but then they thought it was a good idea. they would go for it. And then, like I say, some of them just decided not to go through with it. They stayed on. I got the saying is cold feet.
Would you run into any particular problems with religious groups or?
No, we had a religious girl that was a bus girl, and she came along, and we understood the whole thing. There was no animosity against that there was. They didn't like it, but sort of. You understood the whole thing, and you just carried on the picket line, and they carried on their work inside.
Okay. And what would Bill Stewart say to people to try and convince them to join the union?
Well, he told them that it would be better to get your restaurant organized, and then eventually they would get organized. This would have an opening to organize more restaurants, and this is what happened. They were getting well organized, and quite a few union houses. Restaurants became a union house.
So did the Trocadero strike play an
I think the Trocadero strike played an important part, where it was more or less a beginning. There probably was one or two union houses prior to this, but not many, if I can remember.
When you were striking, did you get money from other union houses?
Yes, the Fraser Cafe in New Westminster, which was a union house. They invited us for meals, and they gave us to the strike fund. I remember picking up some money towards the strike from them and from other unions.
Did people cross your picket line other than the people working inside?
To go in to eat?
Yeah.
Yes.
But were there many? Or?
Not many.
Was the whole principle of helping other unions picket, was that sort of a norm in those days? Were there other strikes where you would then go to help out if workers came to help you on your picket line?
Yes, but it was entirely up to the individual to do that. I think some did. If there was a strike somewhere else, they would go and help out. But when their strike was over, and that they just went back to work, and they just carried on. They did come to union meetings and got more involved and more interested.
Right, okay. Can you talk a little bit about when you were working in the restaurants? Was it mostly women working there?
There was men working too, as waiters and as busboys.
Okay. And so men and women did different work, somewhat different work, or did the waiters do the same kind of work as the waitresses?
Oh, yes.
And did they receive equal benefits, wages? And promotion?
Well, before it was the union, I don't know. Yes, some. I don't think they all got paid equal. I don't think the pay was equal before the strike. I mean, there was a line after the strike for the bus people, and then for the waitresses. There's improved conditions.
So did
they paid them anything they wanted to, up till then?
And did the unionization equalize wages between waiters and waitresses?
Yes.
And what was the system of supervision like in the restaurants? Was there a lot of supervision? Were they hard on the people who worked there?
Some restaurants were very hard on their employees. It was very hard, very, very hard to work for some of the people in those days. And some were not too bad. Some were quite human,
right,
and very good to you.